Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. So today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Theodore Jerome Cullen. He is the author of Endgame, Irrational Acts, Tragic Consequences, and this is the third book of the Antarctic Murders trilogy. His book actually brings an end to consequences of deception events and tragic events that occurred during the Chilean earthquake of May 1960. But first, a little bit about Ted. Theodore Jerome Cullen, Ph.D., holds degrees in the physical sciences from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and has been an engineer and scientist for more than 40 years. From December 1961 through early March 1962, he participated in the 16th Chilean expedition to the Antarctic. The U.S. Board of Geographical Names in October 1964 named the geographical feature Cullen Islands, Antarctica, in his honor. Endgame, Irrational Acts, Tragic Consequences, which is the subject of today's interview, as I had mentioned, is the final book of the Antarctic Murders trilogy. The trilogy describes what happened following the robbery of the Banco Central de Chile in May 1960. More specifically, the robbery and what happened thereafter, primarily the events that took place between May 1960 and March 1962, as described in Book 1, Frozen in Time, Murder at the Bottom of the World, Unfinished Business, Pursuit of an Antarctic Killer, which is Book 2, and reveals the events that unfold between March 1962 and March 1965. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. It's really a pleasure for me to talk to you again, and you are such a prolific writer. I'm totally impressed.
I need to take a rest.
Well, hey, if this is fun and you're enjoying it and you've got a readership and followers, why not keep on writing?
Well, that's a good question, yeah. But it's been five books in, 14 months or so?
That's a lot of writing.
Yeah,
it's a lot of writing. So today, as I just mentioned, we're going to be talking about Endgame, which is the third book of the Antarctic Murders trilogy. And just give our listeners a brief outline of what this book is all about.
As you said, Endgame is the third book in the trilogy, and it brings to an end the saga of Captain Munoz of the Lientour, this saga that began with the robbery of the Central Bank of Chile branch following the great earthquake in 1960 and the shipment to Antarctica of what was taken from that bank and the murders that followed. And we saw, of course, what happened in Antarctica to one of the people who was involved. Actually, we saw what happened to three of them, who were two of them were non-commissioned officers in the Navy. One was a sergeant in the Army. That was in Book 1, Frozen in Time. In Book 2, everything came back from Antarctica, and there were some problems in Arica, where the Lientour was undergoing some repairs. And we introduced some new people who were with the with Internal Affairs, who were investigating those murders. And now it all comes together, appropriately enough, in Endgame, when Ted Stone, the scientist who had gone to Antarctica back in 1961, returns in 1965 to Santiago, along with another scientist that had been with him in 1961-62, and everything comes together. And I don't, of course, want to give away the plot, but the whole story comes to a conclusion in the municipal theater of Santiago during a performance of Mahler's Fifth Symphony, uh-huh. Appropriately enough, my favorite composer. So I think the readers will be pleased, especially my daughters, who would not let me get away with just writing Frozen in Time and leaving it at that. they were the ones that basically just kept calling me and calling me until I agreed to write books 2 and 3.
That's great. So, Ted, how much of this is nonfiction?
If we go back to Frozen in Time, there certainly was a great earthquake. The earthquake of 1960 in Chile was the largest earthquake ever recorded. That was real. To my knowledge, there was no robbery, so that's fiction. And there were no murders in Antarctica. The book has 3, and there were none. And the character Ted Stone, of course, is based on my trip to Antarctica, and I did not get caught in the crevasse, as is, of course, the basis for a large part of the story. But having said that, everything else in Frozen in Time is, in fact, fact.
Okay, and what about in this last book, Endgame?
Well, now, book 2 is fiction, and book 3 is fiction.
Totally fiction.
Is totally fiction.
Okay. But what I'm hearing is that it reflects back on the other 2 books. So, Ted, this Endgame, the 3rd book of the Antarctic Murders trilogy, and also your other new book, which is Death by Wall Street, which has just recently been published, and getting great reviews. There seems to be a recurring theme of deception. I just want to talk about deception and how prevalent it really is in our society today. You know, who are these people? Why are they in our society? These deceptive people. What's going on?
Well,
I can't get it out because it's just like, what is going on?
I think deception has been with us since time began. I mean, we certainly see it in nature. We see species that deceive one another if for no other reason than to survive. I mean, we see butterflies that have large spots on their wings to look like eyes to ward off predators. There's an island in Antarctica that's featured in Frozen in Time called Deception Island, because if you look at it, virtually from every angle except one, it looks like one solid landmass. But if you look at it from a certain angle, you can see an entranceway, which happens to be called Neptune's Bellows, and you can take a ship in there and go into what is basically a sunken cauldron of a volcano. And I've been in there several times inside Deception Island. Fortunately, I was in there before the volcano erupted, which happened a few years after I was there and, of course, destroyed the 3 bases that were there. So we have that. But you can go back in history and you can certainly find all kinds of deception, both in fact and in fiction. And we see it, if you go back to your high school days or even before that and think about the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, and when he and Tom were going down the Ohio River, and you remember the king and the duke that they took aboard their ship, who deceived them and, of course, took over their quarters and forced them to sleep outside. And I was just reading the other day in our local newspaper, there was Dear Abby, who was saying, there was a letter in there about a woman saying that she has a friend who's been involved with a man for 3 years, and he's always on international business travel and traveling to New Zealand and this, that, and everything else. And she's done a little sleuthing and finds out he has no passport, using an assumed name, works as a janitor, has filed for bankruptcy twice, and lives in a trailer. So it's just endemic. Deception is just endemic in our society for any number of reasons, and as I've stated over and over again, we find it in life, we find it in nature, and it's just something that I find very, very interesting. And so I use it as a theme basically in all my books, and you will find it popping up in various ways and out of various people's mouths in my characters. People are not what they seem. You will find people saying things like, "Be careful! He's not the friend you think he is." People tend to show us what a side that they want to show us. We don't always know whom we're dealing with in every case.
Why do you think, Tad, that people are deceptive? What's the underlying core issue in most cases that, you know, I mean, that's really being dishonest. It's being deceptive.
Well,
you know,
it is.
Why do you think people are doing that?
There's no one reason. The bottom line is it obviously works to their benefit. In the case of this mysterious lover that I was just talking about, he obviously wants this woman to think that he's something more than he is. He's probably a married man who's carrying on a double life, and by telling this tale that he's traveling internationally and this, that, and everything else, he can have his wife and he can have this other woman without this other woman being any the wiser. So it's a very selfish thing, and he's protecting his identity. But people do it for all kinds of reasons, to defraud, to protect their identity, to hide. There's no single reason why people do it, but it obviously benefits them in some way, whether it's monetarily or for a love interest. But it's something accrues to them that they want, and the way they get it is by deceiving another party. I mean, we have a problem right now in our neighborhood here, in the area here in Pennsylvania where I live, where people are showing up at the door of elderly and showing what looks like some kind of a federal badge, from some federal agency, saying that the law requires that you sign up for medical insurance. And people, of course, the elderly aren't always as sharp as perhaps they might have once been. And so they're getting them to sign a form and fork over some money. And, of course, that's the last they see of the agent, the form, and the money. And I'm waiting for that person to show up at the door, because I work out in the gym. I may be 72 years old, but I work out in the gym 7 days a week. Grab him and that badge. But it's just something that it's really sad that you always have to be on guard and ask yourself, What's this person's private agenda? Why am I getting this feeling that I'm not getting the whole story here?
Well, I think a lot of times, too, Ted, is, you know, not in the case of maybe this so-called agent that comes to the elderly, but in a lot of cases I think people are deceptive because they have an underlying fear, and maybe it's because they feel that others are not going to really accept them as who they really are, the authentic self. But, you know, so they have to be deceptive to make themselves look very different, or maybe, you know, have more power and control. And, you know, that then leads into deception. So,
well, that's absolutely right. And, I mean, you see this in business, where people will pump up their resumes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how many times have we seen that, even in political life, where all of a sudden somebody says, wait a minute, you claim to have been in the military, and there's no record of you ever having served during the Vietnam War or the Iraqi conflict. And we've even seen in the last election, I'm sure there was at least one case where a candidate withdrew after it was shown that, he never served on active duty, and yet he claimed it. You're right. I mean, there are instances where people just don't think that they can stand on their own merits, and they somehow have to embellish and enhance and otherwise build an image in the public's mind or whatever, in their peers' mind, that's greater than what it really is, because without that, they feel, and it may not be really perceived that way, but they somehow feel that they won't be able to achieve their goals unless they can somehow deceive others. And it's really sad, because most of the time these deceptions are caught.
Exactly, and I was just going to say that eventually the truth comes out, and you know, then you end up being the bad guy. So, you know, in the attempt to be the good guy, you end up being the bad guy, and of course you should, because of, you know, the deceptions that went on. So,
and we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Theodore Jerome Cohen, author of Endgame, the last book in the Antarctic Murders trilogy. Stay tuned, because we are going to continue this interesting conversation with Ted. But in the meantime, if you want to check out his website, it is theodorecohennovels.com. Let's just move on, and I just said the good guy, and it seems another kind of a premise that we have is good guys finish last, and I know that you have an opinion on that.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Well, I actually, in my books, it's sort of phrased another way. I think there's always a feeling, and I know I had it when I was younger, if you lead a good life, and I'm not necessarily saying it in a religious sense, but, you know, if you're a good person and you do good things.
Being honest.
And you're honest, and that good things will happen to you.
Exactly.
And you slowly come to realize that bad things happen to good people. And it really came home to me. This was many, many years ago. I'm originally from the Midwest, and at one time I lived in Milwaukee, which I don't visit now except between May and August, by the way, because of the weather. But at one time I lived in Milwaukee, and I'll never forget reading in a newspaper about a van containing a family from Chicago that was driving to Milwaukee. And it was a pastor and his family of seven, his wife and children, and they were rear-ended by a semi-trailer on I-94 leading up to Milwaukee, and they were all killed. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, he's a man of God. And his family, I mean, what did they do? Why them? I mean, they were ostensibly good people, and in an instant, the seven of them were killed, And by the way, you see a story similar to that in the trilogy, where the wife, I think it's in book two, where the wife and child of one of the characters is killed in an automobile accident. And it's a very difficult thing to come to grips with, that bad thing happen to good people. But the fact of the matter is that bad things happen to everybody, and it's just the nature of life. I mean, it just happens to do. The scientists will tell you that it basically has to do with the second law of thermodynamics, which simply put means that in a system that's not affected by outside forces, things tend towards disorder. And you have to really work to keep things in order. I mean, you can just look around at your house. The appliances break down. The things get dusty. And you really have to work to keep things up. So you, on a local basis, can impose order on your house. But overall, if you look at the universe, things are kind of degenerating, and it's all, I think, part of the same thing. So it's not that bad things only happen to good people. It's just that bad things happen to all of us, and that today or tomorrow it's going to be my turn in the barrel and something's going to happen. I'm going to get a flat tire, or somebody's going to hit me in the rear at a stop sign, and day after tomorrow it'll be somebody else's. But
look at things like that as, you know, let's take a look at the lesson. What lesson do we have to learn? And maybe it's not so bad after all, and really consider it as maybe a lesson instead of a bad thing happening.
It's just part of life.
Yeah, of course.
It's part of life. Nobody has it out for you, and, you know, when things, it's hard to understand. But it's just part of life, and so you'll see, for example, each of the books in the trilogy has an epilogue. The interesting thing about the trilogy is that books one and two end at the same point in time. So the epilogues of books one and two are the same. They both end at the same time, which is, it's in 1965 that they end, March 1965. Well, I won't go into it. It's a little complicated. But book three picks up shortly thereafter. But in the epilogue of book three, Endgame, which is the one we're talking about, I talk about what happens to the characters in the trilogy. And I think the readers will be interested and perhaps surprised by what happens to some of the good characters and what happens to some of the bad characters. Because an unfortunate fact of life is that the good guys don't always win, and sometimes the bad guys get away. And that's a lesson that we see today. And this, of course, is something that I touched upon in another one of my books, Death by Wall Street. If you look at what's happening today in the financial markets, hardly anybody is going to jail. The only people that appear to be going to jail are Bernie Madoff, who turned himself in, and the people who work for him. I see today now, of course, we're talking, this is the 18th. Of November, and the feds just arrested two more of Bernie's people. But nobody from the banking industry, nobody from Wall Street really has gone to jail. And if you go back to the 1980s, when we had the savings and loan debacle, something like 1,100 bankers were sent to jail as a result of that.
Well, things have certainly changed, that's for sure. And this book three, Endgame, You have a pretty good introduction into money laundering and fencing.
Yes.
And that's something that is actually very prevalent right now, too, isn't it?
Well,
you know,
moving money around seems to be the biggest business in the United States today, since we don't produce very much.
Yeah, right.
And yes, the book goes into great detail on money laundering and fencing. People keep asking me how I know so much about it.
Well, that was going to be my question, so tell us.
Well,
tell me you've read about it.
I have to be careful. I was once asked, because of Captain Munoz, whether you know, I had to do a lot of research to write about his character. Some of the money laundering and fencing that's in the book, I will admit I had to do research on. But to me, in my devious mind, some of it is just logical. I mean, if I were put in the position where I had to do what one of the characters in Endgame had to do, that's how I would go about setting it up and doing it. And it makes perfect logical sense, and I'm sure it's used today. I mean, if you had some goods that were hot, it's obvious that you had to find a way to exchange them, and there are any number of ways of doing it, and I describe how to do it in the book. But I mean, it's just as easy. You can dig around, and probably within 15 or 20 minutes, maybe 30 at the most, you can find similar information on the internet. But it was just a matter of putting it all together.
Mm.
And putting it into Endgame, but I think it's done in a pretty devious way in Endgame. And of course, well, I'm not going to go too far down that road, except to say I think it's an interesting tale that will keep people enthralled.
So I have a question about child fencing and that money laundering. Do you think it's greed that's the base of this, or why do people, you know, go into that route?
It's certainly greed. I mean, once a person is in possession of something they shouldn't be in possession with, and they can't move it, they have to launder it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they can't really convert it into something that they can use. Now, in the case of Endgame, the person who needs to do the laundering doesn't need the money, and he has other motives for needing to launder the money, and that's about all I'm going to say.
Okay. That's a good place to stop, because I think that's going to hook our readers and potential readers and listeners to check out Endgame. You know, you have a great trilogy, and I know that your writing is really, really done superbly. Any reviews that I have seen, people are just really enthralled about your writing style. And so I really do encourage the listeners to check out not only Endgame, but your other two books that come before this one. So, Ted, tell our listening audience what your website address is.
Okay, well, thank you. The website is very simple. It's obviously www. And then my name, Theodore Cohn, Theodorecohen as in Nancy, and then novels, novels.com. And that's all one word, theodorecohennovels.com. And you'll find all of my my books out there, along with the ability to click through to Author House, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble. And also, and I certainly want to thank Irene here, we've got some interviews up there. This one will certainly be up there on the website. And there are three book trailers,
yeah,
two of them on the trilogy and one on Death by Wall Street that Irene also has developed. So they're up there. And I think the readers will find the website very entertaining, actually.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. So there you go, readers. And listeners, I do encourage you to check out Ted's books and also his on his website, theodorecohennovels.com. Ted, thank you very much. This has been a pleasure again for me. As I said before, you are such a prolific writer, and I know that you have a huge following. So these books are read, and it gives me great pleasure to interview you.
Well, it's been fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And there you go, listeners. Check him out, Theodore Cohen at theodorecohennovels.com. And this is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.